consider the situation where the Bruins theoretically did stick with Dan Vladar and Jeremy Swayman, which their hands were tied, is not a realistic situation. If they had done that, and imagine things weren't going well for them right now,
we would think about what that conversation
would be like if they were like, we took two, we could have spent that $20 million on somebody like Linus Ullmark or, you know, or whoever. That conversation, I think, would be so much more volatile and much more damning on Bruins management if they had opted to go with two young goalies with this core still intact. And imagine if we were wasting the end of the Bergeron core on two young goalies and they didn't perform well.
Boy, is
you
that
would
a
essentially
good
point. Be telling Patrice Bergeron, hey, you know what? At the end of the season, you can just leave.
Like,
you
want. Don Sweeney would have to
no
fire
one would
himself.
Be prepared for that.
It would be bizarre. So. All right, everybody, welcome back in. It's the podcast of Brews and Bruins, the Hockey Podcast Network podcast presented by Bruins Diehards, sponsored by DraftKings, a drinkable podcast you can taste a hard listen, according to Drew's dad. Number 116 in Australia, number 114 in Norway, number 19 in Brazil, number 5 in Argentina, and of course, number 1 in your hearts. My name is Cam Hasbrook, joined as per usual by Chris Gear. Drew is not with us tonight because he is, of course, waiting for you in the back of your car. But to replace him, we do have the usual bullpen, Nick Lanciani and Jess Belmosto. How is everybody doing tonight?
Feeling the vibes. Yeah, cold.
Cold. Well, that's good. I have the perfect beer for that, but I don't want to jump right to that yet. Chris, how are you? I know you had a little bit of a rough drive home tonight.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Seems like someone was trying to jump off the bridge, I guess. I looked it up on the Twitters and...
Oh,
that seems to be the thing. Seems like no one did.
That's good.
Thankfully. But yeah, those are the perils of working on an island where, you know, sometimes randomly at 5:30 in the evening, you'll just get stuck in gridlock traffic and have no way of getting home. So
yeah,
the day I commuted from Arizona to work today. So
yeah. Long drive. Chris has said potential motorcycle crash, which isn't that much better, but didn't realize it was that either. So that's sorry to throw you on the spot there. But how was your trip to Arizona? You're of course seeing someone you follow on Twitter, someone who has appeared on the pod before, guest of the pod.
Yeah, I was hanging out with best friend of the pod, Isabel, and mother. It was a good time. Real good hangs.
Autonomous human being.
It's been kind of on and off whether I feel like driving or flying. And the drives have been pretty good vibes recently. So
how long of a drive is it?
It's like 5 hours if you include like necessary time to stop for gas and or food.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, it's not too bad. And so what I've been doing is leaving work on Friday and just going straight from work, and
bless your heart,
then taking a half day on Monday so that I kind of get to, you know, enjoy 3 nights. I guess I don't know how many nights that is. Whatever. Not
yeah, it's three.
3 nights, four days, like parts of 4 days. So, you know, get some good quality time in. Watch a bunch of movies. We did some, one of Kat's friends took some family photos of us in the desert. So excited to see those come out.
I always appreciate the Izzy snaps. Always
good. Oh, yeah. Those are always top tier.
Yeah, be careful offering her your phone. She'll just grab it and take it.
That's just a good rule for children in general. Just be careful offering them anything, really, but especially electronic devices.
So she showed remarkable restraint. I gave her my phone and she just sent a bunch of snaps to Kat. I told her she could send them to anybody on the recent list, and so you guys missed out on a few good ones because she just sent them to her mom.
Well, understandable, I guess.
Is it because she's 5 and can't read?
Oh, she reads at like a fifth grade level.
So. Of course she does. Of course. Is that wasn't like a knock at you. I'm sorry if you're listening. I just remember not being very smart at 5.
That's good. Well, yeah, I don't know about Arizona, but up here in Maine, it is definitely getting cold. And to celebrate that, I have picked up an Ice Storm of 98 New England IPA from Baxter Brewing Company. Really like Baxter. I'm trying to think of what they have, whatever their main IPA is. I think it's the Coastal Haze. I get a lot when I'm out to drink when it's on tap. One of my favorite IPAs. This one, I don't like quite as much, but it is pretty good. This is my first time trying it today. It is about 5.8%, so kind of in that middle range when it comes to IPAs. Described as a lush malt profile with dynamic citrus, fruit-forward hop profile. New England IPA is brewed to get us through any winter. That, of course, being named after the Great Ice Storm of 98, which I think knocked out power here in Maine for like 700,000 people, which is like pretty much everyone in Maine.
Wow.
Yeah. So here we go. We'll give it a little sip. On the bitter side, it's described as fruit forward, but I don't get that much of a fruit or citrusy. It's kind of just a kind of generic bitter IPA. Not terribly strong. Drinkability, I'd say, probably pretty good for an IPA. Tastes sort of just like a regular pale ale. I'm going to put it like a 28 for drinkability. Taste on the lower side, especially for an IPA, I'd give it like a 15. Pretty smooth, a little refreshing. I think next time I'll probably go back to the trusty Coastal Haze, but not a bad go-to. And drinking it cold always helps in honor of the ice storm. So there you go, Baxter Brewing. Check them out if you're in Portland. It's a good time. Who wants to go next? Any volunteer? I know Lancey was excited to have some beer on tonight. So Lancey, what you got? Any special for us?
Well, I've got my usual. That is Cold Harbor Brewing Company Novocaine. It's a Dola IPA, 8%, which is, you know, perfect at this time of night.
It is.
And
sticking with the cold theme too. I like that.
Well, yeah. So I was going to say I'm in the Cold Harbor cold room because I'm in the room above the garage. And this time of year, it's very cold. So
this beer classic will not above the garage room being cold. How is it, Lancey? Tell us about it.
37s all around.
Very unique. Lancey has never given that answer before, so that's good.
For a very short period of time before the pandemic started, I would go to trivia night and have between 2 and 3 of these. And
dangerous.
Well, that's you're living on the edge.
I love trivia night.
Trivia night lasted many hours, and I ate dinner with it. So
many hours
by the end of it.
What
kind of trivia is this?
Good 2 or 3, maybe 4 hours. I don't know.
What?
I've experienced both ends of the spectrum on trivia. So the one that I've recently been going to, we started going back maybe like a couple months ago, and that one's like an hour and a half. They swapped out paper and pencil for doing it on the phone, and it's kind of like bang bang, get you through it.
This was always a whiteboard, which was
not a lot of time between questions, not a lot of time between rounds or anything like that. The one that I used to go to back in my hometown was basically like crowded bar. Trivia was like the reason why people were there, but also it was kind of like a background activity. It'd be like each question you get like 5 minutes to like talk about it, and obviously you answer it in like the first 30 seconds, and the rest of the time you're just chilling and talking with your friends. And I like both of those, and I think that's a pretty good business model for getting people to stick around and spend a lot of money.
Yeah, I kind of like the in between where it's like you know, you get like a couple rounds and it's like maybe 10 questions per round that'll take like 10 to 15 minutes. And then you get like 15 or 20 off to submit your answers. And, you know, maybe like a side round, like 1-to-1 here in Maine that they do every week where like, I think it's 3 or 4 rounds of like 10 questions each. And then they have like a drawing round, and pretty much they just have like, you know, a little notepad that you draw something on. And it's pretty much just whoever can make the guy laugh wins like an extra prize. Also a really big fan of music rounds. Always a fun one. So.
Oh, that was my specialty because my friends apparently never heard of like Pink Floyd and stuff, which was shocking to me.
Get some new friends, Lancey.
Yeah.
Right? I was like,
okay, Drew's not here to hear that because he's waiting in the back of your car for you, of course. But
yeah, keep an eye
out. Oh, speaking of Drew.
Oh, God.
just messaged the group chat and said, with you in spirit.
Oh, there you go.
It appears that's nice. He's drinking a beer.
Oh, well, yeah. Drew's got a Town Musicians, which looks awesome. Actually, I really like that can. I'll ask him. Let me type out drinkability.
Right. We'll ask him for a scale.
Question mark.
Yeah, live.
live Q&A.
Yeah, we'll get back to you with Drew's beer review here. But Chris, what you got there?
This is a new segment called In Your DMs with Brews and Brewers.
I believe this is an historic event on this podcast. I don't think I've ever had a cider on this podcast. Not that I'm averse to them or anything. I just I bought a lot of beer during the pandemic and still getting through it. But this is a cider that my old roommate, who no longer lives with us, left in the back of our fridge. And I was just getting tired of looking at it without drinking it. It's a Two Towns Cider House Bright Cider. It's 6%.
It's on the bright side.
Oregon.
There.
Yeah, it says Corvallis, Oregon. That joke. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, boldly crafted in Oregon, it says. I don't know what's bold about it, but radiant and balanced, bright cider shines with Newtown Pippin apples, the pioneer variety that defined the cider palate of the Northwest. I will say, so I'm pretty picky about ciders. I don't like too sweet, but also if it's just like super kicky in the face dry, like that's not my favorite either. So, I mean, it describes itself as pretty balanced, and I would agree with that. It's definitely not too sweet. It doesn't taste like straight up apple juice, but it definitely has a little bit of that flavor to it. I would say it reminds me a lot of drinking just like a casual beer that you might not like a. Not necessarily a light beer, maybe more like a Bud Heavy kind of flavor to it, but obviously you get the apples as well. So I give it, you know, tasteability, it's not super high. It's like you can taste it in the aftertaste kind of realm, but it's not very forward. So I go 12 tasteability, give it a little Gregory Smith action. And then, drinkability, I'm already like halfway through it, so I'm gonna give it like a 34.
Awesome. And Jesse, you breaking out anything tonight or no?
Yeah, I have a Truly because I haven't gone to the store recently. I haven't gone to the Packy. They also don't call it a Packy here, which is really weird because I'm like, oh, like I gotta go to the Packy, and Bradley's like, what?
Yeah, the first time Drew said that on the podcast, I was like, Drew, what the fuck are you talking about? I thought it was like a Drewism, and then I found out it was a real thing. So
it's like going to a Rhode Island friend's house. Pretty much exclusively like a Massachusetts, like Rhode Island thing. Because it's definitely, you hear it in Western Massachusetts, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's the dominant term for it. I think most people just say going to the liquor store, but
maybe not.
You for sure hear it. But yeah, I've never heard it anywhere outside. I've like, heard it in Rhode Island, but
I feel like Pat may have dropped it once. Pat in Rhode Island, of course. Maybe I'm wrong. We do have an update from Drew on his off-color brewing Town Musicians. This is a Vienna malt profile balanced mostly by a round ethanol warmth and dark stone fruit esters in a traditional German lager, perfect for days with cold mornings and warm afternoons. That is from the website. That is not from Drew.
Drew certainly
has. That's way too many words.
Vienna and Munich hops, Magnum and Hersbrucker. Or sorry, Vienna and Munich malts, Magnum and Hersbrucker hops, 6.5% alcohol by volume. Says the secret fact is it becomes a Ellisbach on June 1st. Drew describes it as a heavier Budweiser, but it's good. I don't know if that's implying that Budweiser isn't good or just comparing it to generic beer. He has to add that side note. Anyway, 25
two, two straight or two drinks on this pod compared to.
I know. That's why I saw him DM that right after you said that too. So that's why I was like, wow, that's weird. Now you guys are in each other's head, which is terrifying for you, Chris. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Into the stream.
Yeah. 25 taste, 13 drinkability for the town musicians from Off Color Brewing. So there you go. We'll pivot a little bit here and talk about some hockey.
Yeah, 15 minutes in, we should probably get to it.
Yeah, we'll do a little bit of that. I figured we'd start with a real quick weekend recap. You can skip ahead a minute and a half if you don't want to listen to that. 5-2 win for the Bruins against the Flyers on Saturday after about a year and a half off between games. Better than expected. This weekend was weird because it felt to me like the games should have been flip-flopped. Like, the Bruins looked really rusty during their 4-0 loss to the Flames on Sunday. They looked pretty good and not rusty on Saturday during their 5-2 win over the Flyers. I did put it on Twitter in case anybody listened to Locked On Flames. I did successfully call the shutout on Sunday's game. I may have gotten the wrong team, but, you know, you're welcome for that one, Jess. I know Nesson at the start of the Flames game posted a thing about how good the Bruins secondary scoring had been over the last few games, which seems like a classic commentator's curse because they got jack shit from anyone during that Flames game. Jess, you were there. How was the vibe at TD Garden as the Bruins got their shit rocked by your Flames?
I was the only one having fun. And I had a blast.
Not too many people from Calgary in Boston.
Shouts to Blasty.
Yeah.
To be fair, I did see Johnny Gaudreau's dad, but I wasn't going to interrupt him because he was in line for the bathroom, and I wasn't going to be like, oh my God, your son is like fantastic.
Kind of good at hockey.
Kind of good. But no, there were actually a surprising amount of Sean Monahan jerseys, and I expected to see some Dougie Hamilton and like Noah Hanifin because of the Boston connection. But no, Noah Hanifin jerseys. I mean, Sean Monahan jerseys. A lot of them. But honestly, the Bruins just kind of didn't look too great. It was not Swayman's fault at all by any means. He was left out to dry by his defense, which seems to be the never-ending story for Boston goaltenders. But they were playing a very physical game. I don't know. I think Nick Foligno better watch his back. He's getting a little too comfy. In the first period, he was – I forget who it was, but he was definitely should have been called for holding. And it definitely wasn't on Chris Tanev. But he was getting a little too up close and personal for a little too long, a little not so socially distanced. And, you know, I think that, I don't know, the Flames just outplayed them, plain and simple. It wasn't, I don't know where the Bruins' offense was. I know that Jake DeBrusque had quite a few shots on goal, which was nice to see. And, of course, I was like, oh, like, Jake, like, I want you to score, because I know that people on Twitter will love to see it. But, like, oh, it's a shame you didn't score and got Vladar the shutout. But, you know, just gotta bounce back in 6 months whenever their next game is and try again.
Yeah, I jumped the gun a little bit saying that the games were flipped. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if the Bruins were rusty Saturday, but they definitely looked like a team that is not used to playing back-to-backs at this point. Can't really blame them based on the schedule, but they definitely did not look like they had much in the tank Sunday. And yeah, it was a pretty good shellacking for Calgary. Like you just mentioned, Dan Vladar gets the shutout, his second of the season, I believe that was, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
157 goals against, 945 in five games for him so far with a 4-1 record. Of course, this is Boston, so we overreact to everything. Not we, but certain
yeah, not circles, us for sure.
Certain
not
circles
us.
Of Bruins never, Twitter, never yeah, SB highbrow over here, and I push my glasses up my face so you can't see. Of course, there's goalie controversy because everybody's been pretty happy with Jeremy Swayman, but he loses to his old kind of goalie partner, more like goalie competitor, Dan Vladar.
His main competition,
of course. Those two were tabbed to be potential Bruins goalies of the future as they were working their way up. I don't really want to say through the minors because Swayman barely touched the minors and Vladar really didn't touch the AHL for that long.
Swayman through the minor.
Yeah, Vladar
on all those.
And Vladar, for those of you who maybe don't remember or weren't as into it, I guess a year ago, really, at this point, was thought by many to be the more NHL-ready goaltender. And then, of course, Jeremy Swayman came in and stood on his head at the end of last season. Granted, small sample size, and the Bruins were confident enough in Swayman that they dealt a wave Vladar. So naturally, this is going to be a storyline, seeing those two go against each other. It's one game. Vladar did look great. All the credit to him. Swayman probably got a little shellacked more than the scoreline, or I guess rather less than the scoreline would show. That was the third or fourth goal where he stopped the breakaway, stopped the second-hand chance, and then got a piece of the third one, and then they scored while also the Bruins were on the power play, and Patrice Bergeron was on the ice, which is a thing that I never, ever in a million years thought I was going to see. I mean, naturally a little bit of conversation on Twitter and elsewhere, I'm sure on sports radio, but I would never turn that shit on.
You pay me to listen to that.
Yeah. I don't want to like knock on anybody, but there's a couple shows here in Portland that I like put on once in a while on the way to work. And I just have to turn them off like 3 minutes later. I'm just like, oh, that is not it.
Also, I don't know if you guys could tell on TV. Sorry to interrupt, Cam.
No, keep continue.
I don't know what it was like. Obviously ice is slippery, duh, but like
hot takes.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there that the ice quality did not look great. Like they were falling all over each other.
Because of the trains.
TV Garden notorious for its kind of shitty ice quality. More so later in the year when it starts to get warm and more humid.
But now that I think of it, it was probably close to 60 when I, okay, maybe that's a lie, but it was like 55 yesterday. So, I mean, I know it's not that warm and that's not like playoff weather where like, oh crap, the ice is going to be a slush.
It's going to be water and then water polo hockey, underwater hockey.
Exactly. Cool sport,
which does exist. Fun.
Yeah, it looks crazy. Well, you got to really have some great stamina there.
I believe it's called like Octopush or whatever officially. It's amazing.
I don't know. Yeah, but it looks crazy. Anybody have any hot takes on Vladar and Swayman, or are we all kind of in the pool that it's time to calm the fuck down and it was one game?
That's exactly what I was going to present as a hot take, which is a not hot take at all, because in terms of goalie development, Vladar is obviously a little bit further ahead. He's 2 years older, so he should be, if he's going to be a backup at least, and perhaps a starter, he should be where he's at currently. Swayman is 22, and he's played a grand total of, guess how many games in Providence?
Was it like 8?
9. Really close. 9. Vladar had been there for about five seasons total. And he had done some time in the ECHL. He'd done a little time over in the Czech Republic. As a result of the 56-game schedule last year, he did a little warm-up and then came over here. And, you know, it's about what I expect, as I've said. If people want to start saying, like, oh, well, this, you know, brings up memories of when they had Malcolm Subban, and then, you know, he got claimed off waivers by Vegas for nothing. Okay, and how's he doing now?
Yeah.
We're lighting up the AHL.
Ruptured ice hogs, and he hasn't done that hot. You might think of back in the day when they had Michael Hutchinson as the up-and-coming goaltender in Providence. And it was always Hutchinson. You know, he could be the guy. He could be the guy. It's another year. But another year out, another year out, another year out. And then finally, Winnipeg's the team that comes along and is like, yeah, we'll sign him free agency or whatever. He played as backup, and he beat the Bruins. They couldn't beat the guy that they had the book on because they taught him the book. And nowadays, what's Michael Hutchinson up to? You know, he's about
to run. I don't know.
So this is what happened. And historically, it's a thing that's come back to bite the Bruins many times over. I'm sure the diehard fans from the 1970s will remember Ken Dryden being drafted by the Bruins, going to Cornell, and then signing with Montreal because the Bruins were like, yeah, we got this Cheevers guy. We don't really need to do that much with any other goaltender. Oh, what? What do you mean that Montreal just beat us in the Stanley Cup final in 1971 with a rookie goaltender? What? And then, of course, you know, there's Bernie Parent. If you want to talk about him, 2 seasons with Boston, one season especially as kind of the de facto starter, the other one where it was like, yeah, maybe, you know, I don't know if he'll actually work out here. And then he goes on to have quite the successful career with Philadelphia in two stints, because he had a couple of years with Toronto in between. And, you know, Ladar could be like the modern day Bernie Perron, or maybe that doesn't turn out to be the way that it turns out to be. In any case, it's good for him. You know, he's right about where you should be in terms of what prime goalie age looks like. He's 24. He might be a couple years ahead of it, because I typically think anyone between 27 and 35 is in that prime goaltender age. But if you're 24, 25, 26, you should really start to be in a backup position somewhere. And there's only so many of these jobs available at the NHL level, which just harkens back to last season. You had Rask, Halak, Vladar, Swayman, Kaiser battling for all these positions. And now, of course, you know, Tuca's out because of the injury that he had. Halak went to Vancouver because he didn't really look as good. I mean, Swayman came in, beat him for the backup job. So going into this season, you had two options. You could roll with Swayman and Vladar and be on thin ice. If anything goes wrong, what do you have left? Or you could have signed Linus Ullmark or anyone else and had that sort of companionship with Swayman, who at that point had earned the right to kind of usurp Dan Vladar in the depth chart, despite the fact that they played similarly last season. Mm-hmm. Swayman, of course, in 10 games had a 1.5 goals against average and a 945 save percentage, two shutouts in that span. A little unsustainable, but great first impression. Vladar, in 5 games played, had a 3.4 goals against average and an 886 save percentage. But if you remember, the last game he played in a Bruins uniform, he allowed 8 goals against the Washington Capitals when a ton of guys were injured on April 11th, 2021. So entering that day, he had a 2.25 goals against average and a 922 save percentage. You're looking at virtually the same goaltender for their age range, and you can't go wrong with either one.
That's a lot of goals. That's just my main takeaway there.
I am no Cat Silverman, but I do think you don't want to do that as a goalie.
A lot of people try to forget that game, and you should. That's one of those that you just throw it away, because I think it was the second game of a back-to-back, and everyone was hurt, and it was a matinee. It was the perfect storm in terms of this is the worst thing possible. And people want to complain about the schedule this week, which... it makes sense. I understand where you're coming from, but also if you factor in Celtics games, any concerts, events, that sort of thing, you start to see that the NHL schedule isn't the only thing that exists in the world. And so building availability at times can be pretty limited.
You mean we should go outside and touch some grass?
I'm saying everyone should calm down at the very least. It's still November. This team is not a Stanley Cup contender, but they might surprise you one way or another.
When it comes to goalie evaluation, I like to defer to anybody who has actual expertise on the subject and not somebody like me who just watches goalies and goes, oh, what a sick save, without any sort of context as to like how one achieves that superhuman ability to make saves like that. So I'll usually consult a frequent listener of the podcast, Cat Silverman. I believe one of the times we had her on during that Vladar run, where I was kind of getting maybe a little too excited about him, you know, because Swayman was playing really well and he was kind of the top prospect guy, and I had kind of been saying, well, I mean, look at what Vladar's doing. Like, he obviously came in under really difficult circumstances in the playoffs against the Lightning and got utterly exposed. And then I think everybody kind of cooled on him after that. But he did come in, and even though he wasn't playing quite as well as Swayman was, or at least wasn't putting up the same numbers, but as you mentioned, Lance, he was doing quite well. He was he was putting up some good numbers and giving some solid starts. And I was kind of saying, hey, like, pump the brakes. Like, this guy kind of has a little bit of a pedigree. He has some really good AHL seasons under his belt. Maybe before we cast him aside for Jeremy Swayman, we should start thinking like, hey, this could be a pretty good tandem going forward. And it was good to have Kat on talking about how you know, she doesn't really like his mechanics, and you know, a lot of guys can thrive in the AHL and not necessarily have it translate to the NHL.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, it at the time, a third round pick for him seemed like a pretty reasonable thing. And I think, you know, time will tell whether that's a bad trade or not. But at the same time, as Kat also said on the last episode, you know, you weren't, and what you said as well, Lancey, like you're not going to go into a season with Vladar and Swayman as your goalie tandem, because that's just an insane amount of risk. I think,
what if it's a rebuild?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of teams that come to mind when saying just like going into a season with two goalies and not knowing what's going to happen. And I think the Blue Jackets with Korpisalo and Merzlikins a couple of years back, both those guys were just total unknowns. And then last year with Colin Delia and Kevin Lankinen, just no idea what either of those guys are going to give you for the Blackhawks. And I mean, in both cases, somebody kind of emerged as the starter, but also in both cases, I kind of feel like now you look at it and no one, it really is. So, you know, if you're going to base anything off of small sample size, when looking at goaltenders, I think that's just kind of a recipe for disaster.
And even if you want to take it one step further and just look at beyond just last season, I mean, Swayman in 3 years with the Maine Black Bears, he had a 272 goal against average, 921 save percentage in 31 games in 2017-18. He had a 277, 919 in 35 games in 18-19, 207, 939 in 2019-20 in 34 games played. Of course, he went on to win awards for that because turns out ballet class tends to help with balance and all these other things. That was a really fun
he's beauty and he's great
to check out if you haven't seen it. He also played 1 year in the USHL and he had a 290 and a 914 in 32 games played. Now we can talk about the compete level, the competition at each level of progression in his career. USHL, you can be kind of wild and crazy with your goaltending stats. It doesn't really matter. College hockey and ECHL in a and beyond, that's when you really want to settle in to something at least that's consistent or constantly improving. And he was consistent and improving in every facet. You compare that with Vladar and you look at what he did, and it's a little bit more convoluted. With Chicago in the USHL in 2015-16, 30 games played, he went 12-12-4, had a 231 goals against average and three shutouts. Cool. But keep in mind, junior leagues are 16 to 20 year olds. So, okay, let's see some real competition against professionals in Providence in 2016-17. He went 8 games, 262, 921. Not bad as someone that might be a Providence backup. But then the Bruins organizationally decided, you know, let's just send him to Atlanta because we have a plethora of guys and not enough positions. So in 18 games with the Atlanta Gladiators and the ECHL, he had 389 goals against average and 887 save percentage in 18 games, as I just stated. Whenever you want to talk about ECHL stats as a goaltender, I often think, okay, well, what's the level of goaltending coaching that they're receiving, if any, and the unpredictability overall of the pace of the game and just defense in general. But I know, I mean, when I talk about game pace, you see it all the time. There'll be something that goes viral on Twitter because there are like 10 fights, and that can be very hard for a goaltender to get a rhythm going in terms of like, all right, I'm making saves. It's all becoming a routine and everything. I don't know how often that happened for Atlanta in the 2016-17 season, but it can affect you as especially as you're a young goaltender. And then of course, the following year in 2017-18, four games with Providence, 2.23 and 924 save percentage, 41 games with Atlanta, a 296 and a 911 save percentage. Don't be too concerned with the goals against the average. Look at that save percentage and say, yeah, it's an improvement. That's good.
Don't ever be too concerned with the goals against average unless it comes along with a really bad save percentage.
As stated on Locked On Flames, when we were all on that, I talked about Jacob Markstrom being the quality goaltender for Calgary that they need currently. He might end up with a 277 goals against average at the end of the season. Right now, he has a sub 2. which is great because he's a guy that makes a lot of saves on a lot of shots against with or without a good defense. So Calgary is just loving life right now. And Boston, you know, they got some room to grow. It's going to happen in the post Tuukka-Rask era. Now that's fully acknowledging that Tuukka could come back this season and that next season you might be without him entirely. Yeah, and then, of course, there's a few other seasons in Providence and one more in Atlanta. But again, Dan Vladar to me is like the Riley Smith of goaltenders. Riley Smith, of course, is a skater. He's a forward. One year will be great. The next year will be kind of average. The following year will be great. The next year will be kind of average. He's done that, Vladar in this case. He's done that at the minor league level. Now he's at the NHL level. He can stay as a backup. But how good of a starter can he become? And when you look at that from an organizational perspective, Swayman is your eventual starter for the Bruins, which is why they traded Vladar. Mm-hmm.
I think just kind of to wrap it up, I think the argument that I've been seeing slash hearing is, oh, the Bruins committed $20 million to Linus Ullmark over the next 4 years. They could have spent that money elsewhere and kept these two young goalies who look great so far, which I don't even want to say in hindsight because we're not in hindsight. This is, you know, we're a couple weeks into the season.
We're only four games into the season.
Yeah, it's kind of a ridiculous argument to make, and especially when you're basing it off of one game when these two are playing against each other. From that perspective, you know, the idea is, oh, the Bruins could have not spent that money on Ullmark, and they could have bought a second line center to replace David Krejci. And everything would be fine in the world. And then those Vladar and Swayman would carry the Bruins to victory until Tuukka-Rask came back. And then they would all sing and dance and sing Kumbaya and win a Stanley Cup. It's just but not
outside
realistic.
Of Philip Danault and Jaden Schwartz, who would have been
the
second
line. That's the exact name I was going to say. Philip Danault would have been the guy. But the thing that people forget is that it requires an agreement on the side of the player who wants to sign with a team.
Like, you mean you can't force them?
Yeah, this is
put that pen to paper.
This isn't Chell. You can't just you can't just outbid everybody. You
make swaps.
And
NHL 2K6, I turned off the salary cap. Yeah, thing.
But who's? How are the Bruins going to put together a better offer? Not only in terms of, you know, money and term, but also in terms of quality of life and whatnot from the Kings, and also
fits the player.
Yeah, and also you look at the Kings as that's a team where they have a lot of really good young players in place, and that could be a team where, you know, you look at the contract and say, all right, maybe in the third year of this contract we're looking at like a real contender here with a lot of really interesting pieces around and some money to play with. Whereas you look at the Bruins and you're like, all right, maybe the third year of this contract, what you got? Probably no Patrice Bergeron. You've got aging Brad Marchand. Who knows what they've got on defense? And it's a lot harder sell.
Yeah.
So I mean, even if you have that money to play with, you have to convince players to come there, and it's hard to tell people from Boston. Maybe players don't want to come play here.
What do you mean
for the long term?
And especially the greatest city on earth.
It's original six. It's a great city. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, have you looked at the media? And like people talk about Toronto media. I'm sorry. If I was a professional athlete in Boston, I wouldn't be able to listen to it. I wouldn't acknowledge it.
Honestly, if the original six media markets, I think like Detroit is the only one that you could deal with and not go crazy
happily.
Just yeah. Honestly though, Detroit might only be a thing you can deal with because they've been in a rebuild for so long. That
I was gonna say, they do call themselves Hockey Town when they're doing well.
once that shit fires up, like that's gonna be
but
pretty
I feel
insufferable
like
too.
There wasn't even a lot of like criticism. I mean, I could have totally missed it because I don't really follow Detroit media. When Bertuzzi was like, yeah, no, I'm not getting vaccinated, even though it's going to cost my team wins.
Yeah, I don't
potential wins.
I don't have a lot. I think I have one person from
same
Detroit that I follow.
I think based on expectations, most of the Detroit media has just been like, okay, so we might lose like 9 more games than we expected to already lose. Like, what's the difference?
That's fair.
Yeah. Now, granted, the Red Wings are actually ahead of the Bruins in the standings currently, and well, there's that. But I also want to throw this out,
quote unquote, ahead.
Yeah.
In terms of just the Linus Ullmark vitriol that we've seen on Twitter, because people are starting to acknowledge, like, oh, it turns out Tuukka Rask was elite after all. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Let's take it out on the other Scandinavian guy.
Yeah.
Right. So Selina Solmark, in his short tenure with Boston currently, he's had three games that have been quality starts. That's a save percentage of 900 or above. Shouts Andrew Ray Croft for informing the Nesson audience the other night during the pregame shootout, if you watched. And that's not to say that Ullmark has lost every game that's been a non-quality start, because he's won at least once when he's had save percentage under 900. And it's worth pointing out that every time that he's had a non-quality start, with the exception of the 5-2 loss to Toronto, which had 35 shots against, the rest of them have been under 30 shots against. So he's not getting tested. He can't get a rhythm going. And as a result of some of the decisions made elsewhere on the roster, you know, but you can't exactly entirely fault him alone from an overall standpoint. Now, you might look at the mechanics of the game and you might say, yeah, this is where you can work to improve and do this better. That's a job for Bob Asensa.
Yeah, I was just saying,
Swayman, on the coach. Other hand, mm-hmm. Swayman, Sunday night was just his second sub quality start. Like, he's only had two non-quality starts out of the, what, he's played eight games now, which is, or maybe nine, I don't know.
He looked fine. Being, he passed the eye test. It's not his fault.
There's that, and it's also highly unrealistic to expect your goaltender to be 9 out of 10 in exactly the same amount of games. Like, there's going to be a bad game, whether or not you consider last night, Sunday night, to be a bad game. That's up for the debate.
It's unlikely to be too hot takes. It's unfair.
You're not going to go out there and get Connor Hellebuyck, Andrei Vasilevsky, and Tuukka Rask in your baby goaltender.
Yeah.
Unless you turn the salary cap off.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, unless you break the system. But let's try not to do that.
Yeah. Which we know Toronto talks about all the time. If we just had no salary cap, we'd be good.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Well,
how about the last since 1967?
Well, also, that how's that working for the Yankees?
Yeah, that's right, Yankees Sam. That's right.
Usually for me, but yeah, that's also, come on, Kaylee, come back. We miss you.
Shouts to Kaylee. She's still sick. Get well soon.
Yeah. To wrap it up, give it some more time. You know, it's ridiculous to judge really any of these three goalies right now at this point in the season.
Right.
And consider, you know, this is Tuukka.
Yeah. We're talking a lot of what ifs because that's what we do on a podcast, but consider the situation where the Bruins theoretically did stick with Dan Vladar and Jeremy Swayman, which their hands were tied. It's not a realistic situation. If they had done that, and imagine things weren't going well for them right now,
What that conversation
would be like if they were like, we took two, we could have spent that $20 million on somebody like Linus Ullmark or whoever. That conversation, I think, would be so much more volatile and much more damning on Bruins management if they had opted to go with two young goalies with this core still intact. And imagine if we were wasting the end of the Bergeron core on two young goalies and they didn't perform well.
Boy, is
you
that
would
a
essentially
good point.
Be telling Patrice Bergeron, hey, you know what? At the end of the season, you can just leave if
like,
you want.
And Don Sweeney would have to
no
fire
one would
himself.
Be prepared for that.
It would be bizarre. So the Bruins' hands were tied. You can't keep two young goalies like that are honestly both looked that good. You have to make a decision at some point. Like Chris said, I think at the time, the third round pick was pretty – not many people were like, oh, the Bruins only got a third round pick for Dan Vladar. You know what I mean? He had a good game. He's had a good start to the season. That could be a completely different story a month from now. Maybe it's not. I hope he does well. You know what I mean? He seems like a good dude.
Yeah, I like that
but
guy.
Could totally be a different story in a couple weeks, couple months, even if it's not. Again, you have to consider that flip side. And there's no guarantee that Vladar would be playing this well, of course, in Boston, which I don't think needs to be said, but maybe for somebody out there.
Defense is better.
The point is the Bruins made a pretty calculated gamble based on a lot of what Lancey said of, all right, you have two similar goalies. Vladar is maybe a little bit more convoluted. We're not sure. Swayman, younger, showing similar numbers. Even if he does have those hiccups, he's got some more time to develop. Pretty good calculated risk. end of the story. See how it goes, but way too early to judge on either of those.
Now, I know have, there's another check you want to check on your checklist.
We do. But first, you know we're going to get to there in just a second. But first, I just want to talk real quick about DraftKings, because the Brews and Bruins podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. The NHL season is underway at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. I don't know why they don't say the official sports betting partner of the NHL, because that makes more sense. But anyway, they have an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. It doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection. However they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings daily fantasy sports contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. All right, deep breath. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. Only new customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restricted supply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Go 1-800-GAMBLER. That might have been my best yet.
Is that Slim Shady?
That, I know.
That was Kendrick Lamar. What are you talking about?
Ah, Kendrick, even better.
Let's
now, what
check
I did, ladies and
back
gentlemen,
in with is Lindsay.
Called, it's called a tease in the industry. Because you might be, if you've been under a rock, you might be thinking, oh, they're going to talk David Krejci. He's magically going to come back out of nowhere. No, he's under contract in the Czech Republic for a reason. So he's not coming back. But what we want to talk about is, if you're American, Jacob Zboril and, you know, just his play as a whole this year and how it's looked a lot better than last season. As at least myself, I expected, given that maybe they threw him to the fire a bit too soon last season. If you want to,
I think he's a genius because he deleted all of his social media.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Like, that's
so generally recommended.
Yeah. I truly admire anyone who can do that, because I wouldn't be able to do any of my jobs without social media. So, you know, obviously mental health is very important. And, you know, I think it's one thing to like see criticism about yourself. Like, I'm sure we've all gotten those people in our mentions about, you know, an episode of the pod or an article or whatever.
Wait, hold on. On that note, I think my Twitter header is my favorite all time of those.
Oh, God.
Another well thought out informative response from a 2-bit hockey podcaster.
Oh, my God.
Some good stuff.
That's great.
What exactly does that mean?
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
I don't even remember what it was that we were arguing about.
Inquiring minds want to know.
But it was something very reasonable.
Did you just tweet like Tuukka Rask is elite and the person just freaked out? Because
probably.
It wasn't about Tuukka. It was about somebody else.
Oh, so David Krejci then? Because
it might have been Krejci. It might have been like the Krejci's really good.
It probably was. Or like Tuukka didn't actually play bad. It was other factors that contributed to a loss.
I think the dude like came into my mentions talking about plus minus, and I was like, if you're going to cite plus minus, so I don't really know how to talk to you. And I think that's plus when he came back with another well thought out opinion.
It shouldn't be
sorry,
the only
Jess. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay.
Please continue.
It has a time and place, very limited.
I just think, like, I don't know. I watched him play in Providence for a while, and I thought that he was pushed out too soon. It's kind of. Not everyone is ready to make the jump at the same time as everyone else, in not even necessarily in their draft class, but like who is down in the farm system with them. And it's not fair to like be like, well, Trent Frederick moved up. Okay, that's good for him. He was ready. There was a spot open for him. And
was he?
No, he wasn't.
I have a hot
but
take on Trent Frederick.
Let's hear it.
If I am allowed to squeeze this in here.
Yes, interrupt
Anton
me,
Bleed has won his job.
Yep.
It's going to be difficult for Frederick to come back from an injury.
That's what I meant to say. I was going to say that he had a very strong final shift last night, and he was willing to throw his body in front. I was going to say in front of a train, but that is a horrible metaphor. Please don't do that. But like, you know, in front of, they don't really have
the film Inception.
You're waiting for a train. A train that will take you.
But he was willing to put it all on the line. And he had really big hits. And I also didn't realize that he's like bald.
Yeah.
And
I think he just keeps it like wicked short when he has left.
Yeah. But that's wicked fucking short. And
wicked short, kid.
I just remember when he first came up, and this is like completely off track, but when he first came up and his season was like derailed because he like broke a rib or something. Broke his arm and had to have surgery.
Hand, right?
Probably.
Some kind of limb or extremity.
Yeah, something that required surgery. And I was worried that was going to like set him back and like there wasn't going to be a spot for him. And well, you know what? Sometimes
late bloomer.
Yeah. You know, we just make room for people when it's necessary. And also, Chris Wagner, is he ever going to see time in Boston ever again?
No, probably not.
Okay.
No, and probably for good reason.
He's we enjoy the human being Chris Wagner, but
he's really nice, dude.
I think first year of his contract, he played pretty well as a fourth liner, but we've discussed before. I think even in the last few years, the NHL has been evolving kind of past that type of player, and you know, fourth line grinder is still a thing, but I think I'd rather have guys like Carson Kuhlman in the lineup. And as far as Anton Bleed goes, like I think he skews more toward that type of player, and I'd probably disagree and say that I think Trent Frederick is probably more the type of guy you want.
I think of like fourth line type of player on a Gerard Gallant coach team, with the exception of Ryan Reeves, because I mean, both in Vegas and now with the New York Rangers, he exists, and you can get away with that because sometimes a team can have a Reeves or a Tom Wilson, etc. But when you think of a guy who has a connection with Gerard Gallant on the fourth line currently in Boston, Tomas Nosek, being the exact type of player that you want, Bleed has adapted to kind of that sort of role on the wing, which is pretty good.
Shout out the Nosebleed. I really want to like spend an entire podcast talking about Anton Bleed just so we can name it. If it bleeds, it leads.
Nosebleeds in general.
Are we still on Zboril?
Yeah, I don't know.
I was gonna say go back to Zboril.
I think we talked about Zboril on the last episode or two, but I do want to plant my flag on like I was first on Zboril Mountain. I think just in terms of eye test, I liked what he brought to the game when he first jumped into the lineup. You know, it wasn't always perfect. He was pretty accident prone, but I did think he had some of those qualities where it's like you can tell this guy has like an interesting eye for the game, where he has that patience, he has kind of poise with the puck, and yeah, he'll make mistakes trying to make kind of what he considers to be the perfect play. But I think those are things that and that kind of goes with what you were saying, Jess, is that like some players kind of tend to age differently, and I think the type of guy who does that is someone who maybe needs to figure it out at each level differently, because he clearly didn't have it figured out at the AHL level for a while, and then he started to kind of get it and hit those offensive numbers started kind of peeking in, and then when he jumped to the NHL level, he definitely just had no idea what was going on and was, you know, getting a lot of his passes intercepted. But I always appreciate somebody who kind of has this vision where, you know, this guy's not trying to skate up and down the ice at full speed. Like a guy like Brandon Carlo, who doesn't really have speed as part of his game, but still tries to kind of push the pace a little bit. I think a guy like
focused on shutdown.
Yeah, I think a guy like Zaboral, who has that kind of patience, and I hate, like, I'm not going to compare him to David Krejci because that's fucking stupid, but I mean, a guy
in the two-way sense.
A guy like David Krejci who knows he doesn't have the speed to play the game and had developed this kind of different way of seeing the game and kind of, and obviously a lot of that's innate, so you can't really teach that. But I think Zaboral possesses some of that to a degree, and you have to, a player like that has to be in the system, get consistent playing time, figure out how he plays with his teammates in order to kind of develop that level of, you know, puck moving ability. Cause he's not going to be a guy who, I mean, he definitely did a fair amount of putting the puck on the net, but I don't see him as a sniper or anything, but
yeah, certainly not.
I do think that he's playing really well defensively right now. And I think he's developing an offensive game. Mm-hmm. And I think he needs to be in the lineup consistently.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say, I know you're going to hate what I'm about to say partially, but I don't want to step too much on your toes and what you just said. Cause I
step all over my toes, Lancey.
So plus minus time and place for it, right? In Providence, in his first 68 games in 2017-18, he had a plus 12 rating, 4-15-19 totals. All right. That's decent for a guy that's in his first professional season coming out of major juniors. Fine. Let's see what happens. 2018-19, 4-15-19 totals. Again, 56 games played, might have been injured. Plus three. All right. Not exactly where you'd like to see constant improvement. Consistent, but not, you know, in terms of plus minus where you might want to see it as a defender. 2019-20, 58 games played, 3-16-19 totals. So his scoring has stayed the same, which is honestly fine. You're a defender. Your first thought should be keeping the puck away from your own net and not so much scoring on the net at the other end of the ice. He was a plus 20, which was when he had, in fact, completely kind of changed his game. He had taken it from one level of, hey, I got drafted in the first round. Let's not take anything for granted. But at the same time, like, I'm a first round talent, so I should be able to get there in 2 or 3 years, right? To, wait a minute, let's take a step back here and think about personal development and growth. And in between that, he had two games at the NHL level in 2018-19 where he had one shot on goal and didn't really do much of anything else, but it was a necessity because a ton of guys were injured. He made his debut against the Dallas Stars at American Airlines Center. So he had this realization of, I can get to that next level if I do X, Y, and Z differently. And he did just that. And at that point, it became the sort of thing where, if you remember back in the days of Johnny Boychuk's early days with the Bruins, since he was acquired from the Colorado Avalanche, or Adam McQuaid's early days with the Bruins after being acquired from the Columbus Blue Jackets, they kind of gave those guys about a quarter of the season. They worked them in, they'd be the seventh defender, learn the system, but mostly do your learning from the press box. Watch how the play is developed. Watch where the right guys go at the right times and look at what mistakes are made and how to not make those. So you'd think like 20 games is perfectly fine last season. Well, they didn't really sign anyone. And you can still have that discussion of whether or not they should have brought back Zdeno Chara or anything that you want to discuss in regards to, they have too many young guys on the blue line and, you know, like, figure it out. And then they had a ton of injuries too. So instead of playing 20, 21 games, Zaboral ended up playing 42 games last year. He had 9 assists. 9 assists in 42 games, don't get me wrong, as a defender, that's fine. For a guy that's on the bottom pairing, that's figuring things out in his, quote, first full season. But he was an even rating. And if you're even after 2 games, that's fine. But even after 42 games as a defender, you'd hope that maybe you'd have a little more of an impact in terms of being on the ice when your team scores a goal, as opposed to being on the ice when your team gives up a goal. Because if you're a defender and your team gave up a goal, that means you aren't really doing your job. And Zaboral went through these rough stints where you could clearly see that he'd do something wrong. And instead of what Jeremy Lauzon would do last season, where if he made a mistake, he fought harder to just play the rest of the game the right way, Zaboral kind of got caught overthinking things. And at times it led to foolish penalties. He ended up with 18 penalty minutes in 42 games. Again, not terrible, but also it doesn't help your team in certain situations when you're in the box and you're a player short. Now, Lausanne in Seattle, different story nowadays. Zboril, in terms of the guy that should be a little bit better than how he had been, in five games this season, it was a great thing to kind of hit the reset and say, you're not on the starting opening night roster. In five games this season, since coming in, he's been productive. He's got two assists, even rating, but hey, it's only five games, so that's fine. No penalty minutes, six shots on goal. He had 35 all last season. This year, he's not as focused on trying to make the offense himself as he is on trying to make the right play. And thinking ahead, like David Krejci would as a forward, if he can't beat the player with speed, he'd think two or three plays ahead. How can I make a pass that will make another pass or make a pass that will lead to a shot on goal? And so he's been more effective in getting out of the zone in that regard. And that's what we saw in the last year of Providence that we're starting to see this year so far with Boston. And if we see more of that, then he'll be just fine as a defender. I don't know if he'll ever be top two defender, but he'll be in the top four for sure.
Yeah. But before you go ahead, Cam, I'm just gonna be real quick. I pulled up Zboril's evolving hockey page just to see what the underlying numbers look like, and obviously the small sample size asterisk goes along here. If you've ever been on evolving hockey, you know, if you're looking at the RAPM charts, you want to see purple. He's all purple. Some goals for per 60, one standard deviation above average. His expected goals for per 60 is like 2.5 standard deviations above average. And then everything else is in the like half to one. He's been really good possession wise. He's been pretty good defensively. And that's pretty much all you can ask for.
Yeah. I think, thank you for filling that gap, because one of my caveats was going to be I would like to see some of the fancy stats. I haven't seen that, you know, and obviously that's not everything, but it is important. Nice lock screen.
Here you go, Cam. This is what it looks like.
Nice, all purple. We love that. And yep, a lot of purple. And one of them. Yep.
The big purple is the elite expected goals for per 60.
We love that. We really love that. That's where his best game, as Lancey was saying, he is somebody who can move the puck up the ice pretty well. And, you know, not quite at the level of a McAvoy or a Grizzlick or Riley at this point. But yeah, exactly. But we're getting there. And slowly and steady is a fair thing. I think, like kind of Lancey and Chris both said, I think he is somebody who has pretty good hockey sense, and he recognizes when there's a very good play to be made. And I think as somebody who was jumping up to those levels, like Lancey was saying, that can be a big adjustment, because those plays that look like they're there and were there for you at that lower level suddenly aren't there or are taken away very, very quickly. So when you go to make that play that would be perfect, somebody comes in, picks it off, and all of a sudden, oh shit, I'm the last line of defense, and I just tried to drive one across, and all of a sudden there's nothing there, you're a little bit fucked. But the thing that I've started to notice, I think maybe some other people obviously are picking up on, is that, A, sometimes he can make that play, and he's recognizing when it's okay and smart to make that play, but equally, if not more important, he's recognizing when that play is not there. And rather than just straight bailing out, he is doing what Lancey was kind of alluding to, which is, okay, my plan A wasn't there. What is a safe, first and foremost, and hopefully more effective plan B? That, all right, that pass, cross-ice pass, or, you know, the breakout pass, or whatever it may be, isn't there, because I don't want to leave myself exposed. How can I make another play that's going to keep possession for my team, hopefully drive the puck up ice, but, you know, most importantly, not expose me and the back line, whoever your defensive partner is. If we can see more of that out of him, and he can, you know, keep driving in the puck up ice, keeping, you know, obviously you want to win as many one-on-one battles as you can. That's a huge thing for any defenseman in your own zone, especially, but just kind of recognizing when that really good play is able to be made, and then when you need to bail out and go to plan B and make another safe play is a huge thing. I had one more point with Zaboral, but I'm kind of forgetting what it is, to be honest with you. Oh, that's what it is. Of course, he's going to be known as the first pick in that dreaded 2015 Bruins draft. Oh, they could have had Matt Barzal and fucking Kyle Connor and whatever. He's 24 years old. All right. Obviously, first round picks, you know, not everybody's going to be a McDavid or a McAvoy or something. You know, you want them to be effective at a young age because you need some of them to be, quite frankly, if you're going to be a successful franchise. That being said, the development process, like we said for the goalies, a little bit of a quicker timeline usually for skaters and for defensemen, but it still applies. Not everybody develops at the same rate. If he can become a regular, good, you know, bottom four contributor for the Bruins over the next 2-3 seasons, hopefully a top four contributor on the back half of that, if he's a regular, consistent NHLer by age 26, 27, the Bruins or whoever can get a solid 5, 6, 7, 8 years out of him. If that's all it is, and he calls it a day, that's a pretty good NHL career. If he plays a middle to top four role for 6 or 7 years, that's more than a lot of guys can say at the NHL level. So yeah, average obviously for 5 years, you know, for a first round pick, you want, ideally they make it in a little quicker. I get Bruins fans being a little frustrated that they had 3 opportunities and, you know, whatever, there's guys across the league they could have taken. At the end of the day, it's not too late for him. He's 24 years old. If he can establish himself in the next couple of years, he's still got that prime that he can work through. So give him a little bit more time. Seeing the positive things right now, hopefully he can keep building on them.
To reiterate, the only reach in 2015 around the time that Boston got up to make their 3 consecutive picks was Zach Senyshyn. He was expected to go outside the first round. Jake DeBrusk and Jacob Zboril were right about where the Bruins took them. And I mean, DeBrusk, you can debate that another day if you want, in terms of how effective he's been. He's been a little consistent, but hey, you know, as long as he just sells in around 20 goals, he's fine. Zboril, being a defender, it takes a little longer to develop, as noted. And, oh yeah, the NHL draft is one of the strangest things in all of professional sports. The NFL draft, you pick a player anywhere and they're on the team immediately the following year. The NHL draft, you pick a player in the top 2 and they might be on the team the following year, unless they're a defender. Look at Owen Power with Buffalo this year. Oops, he's with University of Michigan because it turns out they are a super team in the NCAA. But if you get picked outside of the top 5, if you get picked in the top 10, outside of the top 10, just in the first round in general, you're not guaranteed a spot in the first year, let alone 3 years. You got to develop. And everyone develops at their own pace and their own rate. And he's coming into his own now, which is perfectly fine. No, he might not be a Zdeno Chara in terms of eventual Hockey Hall of Famer, but he's serviceable. Right? Like, and to the credit of hard workers, no one works harder for their ice time than Connor Clifton, historically speaking, in his entire development and now. So if Zboril can get to the level where he plays as a top 4 defender, this starts to threaten what they do going into next offseason. Because now you have a dilemma where you might have Grizzlick as a top 4 guy, you might have Carlo as a top 4 guy, but with the wild card of Zboril coming in, what do you do? You got too many guys and only 2 roles. And if you legitimately think that Clifton Bruins could be a sixth defender,
Carlo. I think the Bruins should trade Brandon Carlo.
And that is where the fun begins. But that's also assuming that everything goes right.
It's a conversation for another time, because I don't think
the fun ends.
they shouldn't trade Brandon Carlo right now.
No, absolutely not.
I think depending on what's going on at the trade deadline, what you think you need in terms of evaluating your team, if the Bruins are in playoff contention and they're trying to become a cup contender, Brandon Carlo is the guy you look at and say, this is the guy that the league values higher than the most his actual value.
Considering his height and everything.
Yeah. So that's something to talk about. But as far as Zboril goes, I mean, we might have mentioned this on the last episode, but if you're trying out, if you're willing to split up McAvoy and Grizzlick,
I would prefer to see Zboril on that top pairing than Forsberg.
We saw for like a shift.
Derek
four scored goals isn't good enough for you.
Four goals is unsustainable if you actually saw the four goals he scored. He did fucking rip one of
Speaking
those.
Speaking of sustainable stats.
I just wait till Jakob Skrtel comes out and then we'll be all set.
Gonna make some really good Pokemon memes from that.
All right, this has already gone longer than we expected, but I think this is a fun one. So
this was
fun. So we'll look back later this week.
We got court coming up.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm scared to tease people because we've had to have a couple people bail recently, but
I'm hoping nothing bad happens between today and tomorrow.
Yeah. Great friend of the pod, Cortland Lone, scheduled for Friday this week.
I've never recorded with him before. He's been
Which
on the
is
podcast
crazy.
Twice.
Yeah, I have very distinct memories of recording at the beginning of the pandemic with our coronas.
He may have been on the podcast three times. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think he has been actually.
I have this in the notes somewhere.
There you go.
Keep talking. I'll find it.
Yeah, Court will be on hopefully later this week. A little Bruins, a little bit of Halo Infinite talk. We know Court's a big gamer. A little NHL talk.
We're not gonna touch on the Pride at all.
And we will definitely be touching on the Pride as well.
Court has been on at least three times.
I think it's all three. Right. Yeah, it's been too long. So. Thank you, as always, to Jess and Nick for coming out of the bullpen. Strong relievers. If the Red Sox had a bullpen as strong as you guys, they'd still be playing baseball for the Global Galactic Tournament right now, which is the Space Jam of baseball.
It's the secret tournament that happens after the World Series.
Exactly. Everybody else, go listen to Locked On Flames. Go listen to Down the Frozen River. And come back on Friday. Listen to some Brews and Bruins.
Download all three of these podcasts and don't listen to any of them.
Yeah, that's all I tell people. You don't have to listen to them. Just download them.
Chris, my cat is not a shot as well. My co-host.
Everybody else, go get your Bruce
shots. Just the other Cam. We'll have him on sometime.
Yeah,
you should. You absolutely
I'm
should.
Probably the other Cam, though, to be fair. Go get your boosters and drink.
Wear your mask.
See you next time, y'all.